What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Rod, this sounds like some shit that'll happen to you. Now hiring. A comedian has been fired by Carnival Cruise Lines after video emerged of him being accused by audience members of using the N-word a couple times. This is a white comedian.
Oh.
Oh.
On a boat?
After that video surfaced, he was escorted off that goddamn ship. And they said, get your ass the fuck up out of here. Now, according to this comedian, it wasn't the fact that he said the N-word once and the joke was race-related, not racist. Per his quote to TMZ. But the fact that an audience member or two made a stink about him saying the N-word.
He basically said nobody was mad that I said the N-word. People was mad that they heard it. Like yeah, that's the same thing.
This is the thing that's wild, though. If you're in between ports on a cruise ship as a comedian and you get fired, they send a helicopter for your ass.
What?
Carnival is cold-blooded. Yo, these cruise ship companies, you don't get an extra day. Motherfucker, you're fired. Go get your shit and go stand by the helipad.
That sounds pretty cool to me.
That's all the more reason to get kicked off the damn cruise ship. I drop an N-bombs left and right.
Yeah, that's a golden parachute. That's like,
right?
It's like, oh shit, you kick me off the ship. I get to take a helicopter back to the country. Like, yeah, this is awful.
Here's what would have made this shit perfect. If he got fired for saying the N-word and then he got on that helicopter, and as the helicopter was taking off, he looked down at the boat and was like, I'll holler at you niggas. My name is Roy. This is my job fair.
Sounded like Chappelle just then.
Didn't he like the same tone and everything?
Yes.
He sounded like he do his Tron impression. He sounded like Tron.
Now. Now, I know when you was looking at the podcast, you know, I don't know how y'all do the job fair shit when you download it every week third. But you look at the length of the episode and you'd be like, why the fuck is this episode so long? Well,
is that what they say?
We're giving you a little extra dope this week. We normally don't break an hour other than Jesus week and the Freaky Deaky week when we was talking to all the people, the OnlyFans and the pastors back to back.
Not women?
But that was a month, though. That was a dedication. That was
okay.
Yeah, that don't count. You know, we normally don't have two guests for Worse and First, but I think it's important to lead off with this person before we get into the whole rap and politics thing this week. JG, who do we have on the line?
It's Thomas Lennon. He is an actor, author, producer and screenwriter, and he's best known for his role as the ridiculous Lieutenant Jim Dangle on Reno 911. Thomas is also an accomplished screenwriter and a script doctor. He's written a number of successful films with his writing partner, Robert Ben Garnett, including The Night at the Museum franchise, Taxi, and Baywatch. The pair also serve as co-creators of Reno 911. Today, Thomas will be talking to you, Roy, about his impressive career in show business. Hello, Thomas.
Hi. It's so nice to be here. And the funny thing is, I thought I had a bad job. And then when you said that I was a screenwriter, I was like, oh, shit. That's the worst job I've ever had. because I thought I was going to come on and talk about something totally different. And then I remembered what it was like to be a screenwriter. Ooh. And I was like, oh, no. Sorry, Roy, I cut you off. You were saying hello.
No, it's all good. The film premiering on Comedy Central December 3rd and streaming on the Paramount Plus app after that, if you're hearing this later. Yep. It's called It's a Wonderful Heist, a Reno 911 movie.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Brother Lennon, we don't have a lot of time, but I do have one Reno 911 question. Do members of the law enforcement community view your program as a friend or foe to the perceptions of law enforcement? I'm not.
Oh, it's a great
question. Just start right now. This ain't no deep ass question. I'm not trying to get you to talk about police reform or some shit.
Please.
Just in the sense of when you walking down the street and a cop recognize you, is it a scowl or a smile?
This is interesting, and it has definitely changed over time. So I think when the show first came out, when Reno 911 first came out, the actual Reno Police Department got a lot of angry calls and letters that their officers were behaving so horribly on camera. Now, of course, we're the Reno Sheriff's Department, which doesn't exist. It's fake. And
correct.
So there was a weird vibe at the beginning. There's a weird vibe at the beginning for sure. And I will say now that we're 125 episodes in and three movies, it's just different. It's hard to get a ticket with the Lieutenant Dangle mustache. It's pretty hard to get a ticket.
Really?
No. I was going to ask, is it the ticket or the shorts?
Okay, I'm going to say something that's kind of weird about myself. I have in the car, in case I need to give it to somebody, I have like a Reno 911 badge with like a patch and then like a card from the California Highway Patrol. And my wife asked me the other day, she's like, how are you different from Herschel Walker?
Buck, Jesus Lord.
Driving around in the car with a badge. And I'm like, Thomas. Well, I don't take it out.
Don't take it out.
So It's a Wonderful Heist. Talk to us a little bit about how you all were able to mix Christmas time with police work. Because those two on paper, you don't necessarily think about. But also, talk to us a little bit about just the improv elements and how you all work through a scene, because the show feels more like Jell-O than concrete in terms of the script.
So. The improvisational nature of the show is also the answer to everything else about the show, which is it is the only reason it has survived. And people have tried to copy it, in shows, but you have to have Niecy and you have to have Cedric and you have to have Carrie. You got to have like all those elements. By the way, Niecy was going back and forth between doing the Jeff Dahmer show and our dumb Christmas movie.
Really? Oh, wow.
How did you do that? And she would do double duty. Like, she would just come, like, she would one day be doing, like, the scariest scenes in the world, and then she'd come in and play T.T., where she's running around the bounty house.
T.T. is
and
the
I'm
shit.
In a dock trap. So she has the best, like, work schedule in the world, where she can come run around with me in a jockstrap, and then the next day has to sob with Jeffrey, like Jahmer is eating people next door in the hallway.
Thomas.
Somebody was joking on Twitter about Niecy Nash that she left Reno 911 to work for the feds because now she's on ABC.
Right, that's just hilarious, man.
She got her shit together.
She got called up to the show.
Y'all have ruined her for me, for the record. It is so hard for me to watch her as a cop and being serious on feds, when for years I've watched her just rolling around with Reno 911. It's a hell of a transition.
I know. It's amazing. We're very lucky that she still comes in. And
I like
even
her.
After all the Emmy nominations and everything, that she still comes and visits us. Mm. The only reason the show has kept going in a big way is because of the unscripted nature and because what we're all saying to each other. One, we're all really good friends. And now we've known each other. You know, we shot the pilot in the year 2000.
Wow.
So, like, we've seen everything come and go. And in those morning briefing scenes on the show, you can always tell, like, no one's approved what we're saying to each other. It's like, what? The dumbest people. Yeah. No one's vetted all this dumb shit that we talk about. So I think that's why it feels like honest conversations between people. And I think that it feels rare because, you know, a lot of times you see shows where things are carefully scripted and we obviously don't do that, you know. And then the other thing is, you know, a lot of people were like, yeah, in a world where cops are so glorified. And I'm like, if you think cops have been glorified on Reno 911, you have never seen the show. Because we're like doing whippets in the car.
And people are fucking your bicycle.
Where people got fucking
what is bicycle. Going on this show?
That made the trailer of the movie.
So, Thomas Lennon, you have starred in innumerable television shows and movies, and your writing career has been illustrious, and stand-up comedy followed after years of toiling in the improv scene and perfecting that skill set. And researcher Hayat did some digging. New York Times bestselling author as well, Jacqueline. This brother's written 3 young adult novels. All about the character Ronan Boyle. Ronan Boyle in The Bridge of Riddles and The Swamp of Certain Death, and Ronan Boyle into The Strange Place. Ronan Boyle in The Bridge of Riddles. But before all of that, you was a broke motherfucker. And I want to know about it. And I want to know about that time in your life. Tell us about that job, Thomas Lennon, when that struggle, when your ribs was touching, when you and your roommate had to split a fucking McRib over the course of 2 days.
Don't eat that.
Tell us about it. Worst to first job. I'm sorry for raising my voice respectfully.
One of the most interesting jobs I ever had, and I think it was very good practice for being an actor and also screenwriting. I did telemarketing, and I was down on a bank of phones. There was about 8 or 12 of us in a basement, and we had like regular telephones like we used to have, you know, like a telephone that was connected to the wall on a cord.
Landline joints.
Landline.
You remember your script?
It was incredible. They brought me in and they're like, well, you're new, so we're going to give you the worst one that exists. And I was like, what am I doing? And they're like, here is a stack of computer paper with like 2,000 phone numbers on it and names.
Just numbers.
And you've got to call them.
List.
And these were all people that had made a telephone call on an airplane air phone. Remember when the airplanes, I don't know if you guys remember, the middle seat used to have a phone. And you could swipe your credit card and it would pretend to call somebody. And you would scream that
you're from an airplane.
I just spent $40 to call you from an airplane. And you would scream it.
Yeah.
And the thing about the airphone, and it was in the middle seat of the 3 seats, as if you were just casually talking to people and the other people wouldn't give a shit.
Just reaching over people. Excuse me.
Can I use that middle phone seat?
Right.
So
sorry.
Everybody fucking hated the airphone. It was the worst idea in the history of the world. And it also apparently didn't work.
Oh.
I had to call every single person on my list had a complaint about the telephone call that they had made from an airplane. The people that are going to already complain about they didn't like the phone service on the airplane, they're not going to be nice when you call them at dinner time. I said, hi, this is Thomas. I'm calling from, you know, such and such industries. And, you know, we know you had a problem with the airphone call and it didn't work out. And we just wanted to follow up with a couple questions. And generally the response would be, Thomas, I hope one day you have a family so that I can, I will call you during dinner and I will ruin your evening.
Oh, gosh.
That was the one that stuck with me forever.
Come on.
I was like, wow, people can be really, really mean.
Yeah.
All the things you've learned so far and all the things you've done so far, what has been some of the best advice or anything that you've learned? Because me personally, when people stop listening, I stop talking. So that actually saves me time and energy. So any good advice?
If you can be nice when you get fired from something, that's basically the best thing you can do in the entire world. Mm. Like be the person that they want to hire again when somebody else messes up. Because, like, it's going to come up all the time. There's only so many people out there, and there's only so many people that do what you do. And some people will be lovely and a lot of fun and great to work with, and some people will be enormous pains in the ass. Be the great ex that they dream about, you know?
I like where you're going, though, Thomas.
When somebody else gets the job, make them wish it was still you, you know? From how nice you were when you got fired.
Just want to ask you, Thomas, very quickly. Please tell me what it was like to work with Weird Al Yankovic on Weird. I'm a fan, and I watched that one with my kids, bro. I can't even lie. Like, it was an amazingly funny.
It's one of the greatest movies ever. I'm so proud of that.
Ever.
Al's been like my best friend for about 16, 17 years.
Wow, really?
And I met him one day. I walked up to him at the office, the Staples Office Supplies, and I said, "Hey, you're Weird Al." He's like, "You're Lieutenant Dango." I'm like, "Let's be friends." We've been friends for 17.
Oh.
That's awesome.
We look forward to this film. It's a Wonderful Heist, December 3rd on Comedy Central. The Reno 911 gang rides again. And after December 3rd, it's on the Paramount Plus app. Get that wherever you stream media legally. Thomas Lennon.
Thanks for representing our parent company, Viacom, by saying stream.
Proud parent company. South Park and Press Production, Paramount Plus, and please get the subscription and get the fucking one that don't pay for ads. Pay the good money.
Get the good one. And also, right, one time we audited Viacom to see how much money they owed us, and it turned out we owed them $30,000 for auditing.
Oh, shit.
All three. That's what you get for digging for the truth.
Don't dig for the truth.
That's what you get. Good advice.
Excellent advice.
Thomas Lennon, thank you so much for coming on the Job Fair, brother.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Big fan.
Third, I'd like to pose a question to you before we bring this guest on.
Okay.
Which industry do you think is shadier?
Oh, that's easy.
The music industry, record industry, or politics?
Ooh. Ooh, wait a minute. Oh, you threw a caveat.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's not fair.
Yeah. Oh. Record industry or politics? Which one is shadier?
As a native Washingtonian, yeah, bro, you already know I'm going politics. Ain't nothing shadier than politics, bro. I ain't going front. On the big stage, whew.
I don't know, though. I don't know. To me, the difference between the two is that in politics, you know it's shady from the jump, and you figure out how to navigate the shadiness. The music industry is built on lies that you do not discover are lies until 5 to 10 years into the game, and it's too late because I got you signed to everything, and the next thing you know, a motherfucker is hanging outside of a window of a hotel window balcony demanding that you sign over your goddamn masters.
And also knowing that you know his office hours, which are from 9 to 5. I understand what you're saying, brother. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Oh, you're talking about 5 heartbeats. I was talking about Suge Knight. That's a much safer comparison. I respect that. You just saved my ass. That's right. I was talking about Big Red. Mm-hmm. When we talk about, you know, hip hop and rap, it's one of those interesting occupations that they don't talk much about the second act. They don't talk much about quote unquote retirement or what you're going to pivot into, because, you know, the record industry is always chasing people that are young, new, and the latest shiny thing. So it's always dope to have brothers that have figured out what they're going to do and elevate what they have been doing. And we have exactly that type of person on the line. JG, who we got?
We welcome the Honorable Dupree Kelly. Counselor Kelly joins us from Newark, New Jersey. He's an HBCU graduate and a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. He spent years in the music industry as a member of the hip hop group Lords of the Underground. In June of this year, he became the first platinum selling rapper in the U.S. to win elected office. Prior to joining politics, he played an active role in his hometown of Newark through his nonprofit 211 Community Impact. So we welcome the Honorable Dupree Kelly. Hello.
Now, Lords of the Underground, this wonderful group that you were a part of, you all came around at a time, and I'm from the South. I'm from Alabama.
My family from out there, man. Shout out to everybody in the Ham.
Then you know what the music vibes were down there. It was more West Coast, and the South was very much us and I stuff and Texas. It was Texas and California tracks. So what you all were doing was innovative because it felt East Coast. We knew it was East Coast-ish, but it didn't, it somehow fit into what the Southern ideology was, because you all weren't necessarily trying to fit in with everything else that everybody was doing. Walk us through, because whatever you are now, that shit was in you way back. Here come the Lord. Here come the Lord. You was probably thinking of, you was probably thinking of ways to stop hunger while opening up for Busta Rhymes.
Right.
Yeah.
So walk us through what you were feeling at the time in the music industry and how that led to you starting to run for public office. And if I'm not mistaken, I'll check Booker Hayat's data here in a second, but you lost the first time you ran for some shit.
We took a learn. We took a L. We took a learn. We don't call it a loss. We took a
nice. Learn. Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. Okay.
I mean, man, just to interject on what y'all was talking about of how Lords of the Underground didn't, you know, we felt East Coast-ish, but, you know, it tied into so many other people. I think that's because we were in college. You know, we were at an HBCU, Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Shout out.
We had people from Chicago. We had people from California. We had our DJs from Cleveland, Ohio. He from the OH10. You know, he from the Heights in Cleveland. You know, so we had so many different sounds that, you know, hip hop, you make hip hop, you know, from your environment, from your surroundings. That's the way I was taught the hip hop, whether you was on the East Coast or West Coast, you know, so we had so many different things that were in our circumference, in our surroundings back then that made up the sound. And then the East Coast part is we had Marley Marl, who was like Russell Simmons back then.
Right.
And a dude from New Jersey who kept it Jersey by the name of DJ K-Def. So that rounded out and made up what the sound of Lords of the Underground is. A L.A. manager, a Newark manager, a Cleveland DJ, two rappers from Newark, New Jersey, from two different sides, you know, and then you had a, you know, a manager who was Muslim, a manager who was straight out of college, who was a blood, you know,
and all making music in a city with a waffle
house.
You know, great demographics.
With great hats.
Great demographics.
You know what I mean? So it really compiled all of that energy to one studio. And that's what you got, man. You got a jumbo of college kids who was excited to be capturing their dreams. And to tie it all in to you saying, what was I doing then? And was I on the same thing? I was, man. And that is, you know, a testament to my manager, one of our managers. We had two managers back then, a brother by the name of Hafiz Fareed, who was a Muslim brother. So, you know, you got Muslim brothers from, just think of my man from Minister Society with the bald head. And he was like, you should be playing that anyway, brother.
Yes.
You know, that was our manager. Just think of a grown version of him. You know, when we 19, he 30. So just think of a grown version of that guy with these young men that come from a wild place like Newark, New Jersey, a wild place like Cleveland, Ohio. So, you know, we started out with the B words and the F bombs and the you know, nigga, you know, all of that type of stuff. But we had a manager who never really told us what to do, but he did question what we did, you know, and he would say, you know, so if we dropped the B word in our rhyme, he would say, oh, that sound cool. He's like, who you talking about, your mother? And we'd be like, what?
Better change it quick.
What you talking about? You trying to like, nah, you said that you was with this B over here and over there. Who you talking about? Your mother, your sister, your grandmother? And we're like, yo, you trying to be funny? He's like, nah, I'm just asking you because that's what some women are gonna think. So what point are you trying to get across?
He was elevating.
Yeah, he wasn't telling us to take it out though. But by the time he came back to the studio, it was gone because he was challenging us in that type of way.
Positive energy activates constant elevation.
Right. And if we had a bunch of N-words in the music, he would say, you know, well, where's the rap part? You know?
Yeah. You can't be too conscious.
Jedi mind tricks.
Y'all were young guys. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being really honest, Lords of the Underground came out right around the same time as Redman, right around the same time before Dos Effects. The stuff that y'all did on that first album, I felt as if a lot of people just kind of emulated what you guys kind of started. You know what I'm saying? Like, because y'all were young kids. Y'all were super young kids when y'all did that. And I personally feel like y'all led a certain wave of that 90s era hip hop.
Yo, Third, I got to salute you, bro, because you got to be a hip hop head to really understand that. And let me tell you why I'm saluting you, because I know you understand it, because you only going to understand it if you paid attention. Right. And what I mean by that is I introduced Redman to EPMD. I introduced Redman to Eric Sermon.
Holy shit.
Eric Sermon was coming to Newark, New Jersey to sign Do Pray Kelly, Do It All. Not Redman. Redman was my DJ.
I've heard that story. I never knew that was you. That
he came to sign
that's
you.
That's crazy.
He was coming to sign me. And I got sick and I told my boy, so Eric was coming to see me. So what happened was myself, a brother by the name of Jam C, who runs a dope podcast now, another brother by the name of Breida Bega, who introduced us to Bismarck and all the graffiti cats like K Slay and all of them back in the day. They used to always go to New York and they were real tight on the hip hop scene. So I started to get my name up freestyling at the clubs and winning all of the talent shows. That's when the communities had talent shows. And Redman was my DJ. And Jam C said, yo, I got this brother by the name of Sport D, who we call Diesel Don. He got a bunch of studio stuff in his living room. He's a chef, but he's a dope producer. So we went over to his house, you know, got real cool with him. And long story short, we used to look on the back of the cassettes and the albums and look at the managements and the record labels, and we used to go visit them. So we started to go visit Rush Management, which was downtown at this time, you know. And when we went in there, you know, it's a small office building, and everybody who you love in the hip hop world came through there from Houdini, and they was the stars back then. Like when they walked in the building, mm-hmm. my God. And LL Cool J and Run DMC, they was managed, but they weren't on the label. And Flavor Flav, and I'll shout out to Flavor Flav, because every time he saw us in that hallway, he would make sure he would take us to the corner store and get chips and juice.
Aww.
You know, and PE.
And those little moments are so important.
But they used to always make us wait. Yeah, wait here in the lobby. Of course, we waited 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours.
However long it took, yeah.
Yeah, because that was the thing. Like, we're going to make you wait until you leave or you don't leave. And one night we waited so long that we used to hear all, you know, people start, they chit-chatting all through the office. So we heard everything that was going on. And we heard that... it was EPMD having a gold party that was coming up. So I went home. We went home and I called WBLS and just happened to win tickets. So I won two tickets.
That's real. That's it.
But it was four of us.
Thank God.
So I came back the next day. We waited again. And I said, don't you have a gold party coming up for EPMD? Can we go? And Faith, who turned into an executive, she was just working in the lobby. She said, I'll give you two passes. I'll put your name on for two. So I was like, bet. Wow. I already got two tickets from winning. So I got my whole.
There you go.
And that was me, Breida Bega, Jam C, and Redman, who was just Reggie Noble at the time. Wow. And we went in there.
Government name.
And Jam C, and I was the rapper. So everybody, you know, I was like next up. Jam C and Bree rap too, but I was like that dude at the time. So. Everybody was telling Eric, yo, he's that guy. Come rock with him. And he said, yo, I'm going to be down Sensations. I'm going to be down. There's a club called Sensations in Newark. Exactly. You know how to trouble talk. I'm going to be down to Sensations. You know, make sure you come down. I'm going to have P down. You know, come down. We're going to check
that's
you out.
That's how you talk, you know,
for some reason, you know, I'm 17 years old at this time. So for some reason, I don't know if I got sick or something happened where I couldn't go. So I called Red and I said, yo, you got to go. You got to go down there.
Oh, that's good.
Represent for the crew. Now, Red was an incredible freestyling dude. He used to DJ and grab the mic and freestyle while he was DJing, which made the set dope. So long story short, man, he went down there. And my guy, Breida Vega, who rapped too. Breida Vega, if you listen to Lords of the Underground, he's the one saying, Never Faded on a record called Never Faded. He's the one singing the hook. And he told him, he said, yo, where's the rapper? And he's like, oh, he's not here. And he said, Red rhymed too. And Red had just wrote a rhyme that weekend. And that was Red Man Ready to Rock, damn. Rough Rhymes, the Renegade Rapper, Rip when it's rhyme time, Pump, Push a Pen and Pencil when I'm pissed, Pack Pistol Posse, Flow some old pro shit. That was the rap that he said he had just wrote it. And they went crazy. And Doc called me that night, like, yo, I rapped for them. They went crazy. They said they want us to come to the house. Now, we thinking we EPMD, so we went downtown Newark to Dr. J's and bought the same sneakers, the same jacket, same, just like we caught the train to Long Island, you know, Central Islip, and went to Eric's house. Oh. You know, Eric in the kitchen making a hamburger with an egg on it. You know,
he hit the curve if he was doing that.
Yeah.
And then that's how they got down with EPMD. And then so now you're down with EPMD. So I can't front on Red. He bought me in, but you know, I'm the type of dude, I'm not gonna knock your opportunity, because if it's my man, I feel like it's all of us. You know, even though they was coming to get me first, I felt like if I'm with Red now, you got both of us now. And they had these two other guys that were from college that went to Virginia Union, I believe it was, another HBCU. But that was P's group. And they were called
Dos Effects.
One of them from Jersey. Yep. And P kept saying, do it all. You
I don't know who P is. You got to help me.
Parrish Smith from PMD.
Okay.
And Parrish would tell me, yo, dude, you remind me of my dude I got from college. He was talking about Dre's. You know, Dre's was from Jersey. So Dre's was that Jersey sound. So when you hear Dos Effects, right, when you hear Red Man, that is really my influence initially in the Jersey sound. And that's why when Dos Effects came out before us and Red Man came out before Lords, and then we came out, everybody was saying, man, it's something about the energy. Y'all sound like Dos. And I was like, how do we sound like Dos? And we don't do any diggity, diggity, nothing.
None of that. Rap. But it was the energy. Here come the Lords. Like the horns, the voice, even the way that the lyrics are delivered. There's just a fire energy to it.
Third, you know why Here Come the Lords had that energy? Because we were upset. We felt like all of the energy that we did inside of Eric's house in front of Parrish and everybody, we felt like that it was taken from us and given to Dos Effects. So now when you hear even us doing this in the video, all of that was towards Dos at the time when, hey, Funky, wake up. Turn on the radio. It's us. Yeah, listen to the cut. It's our style. Our style? Your style? No, your style. We saying that our style is on the radio before we're on the radio.
Damn.
That's what we was talking about, you know? So, you know, all of that you felt and helped, that's where, you know, it came from, man.
I officially have no more questions, Roy.
Job fair. We'll be right back.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Job fair, the Honorable Dupree Kelly standing by for Scam of the Week. We're going to talk a little bit more about that world of rap music and what it was like coming up with Lords of the Underground and that entire hip-hop scene. And the fact that he was kicking it with EPMD and Redman Third back when he was just Reggie Noble.
Right. The fact that Redman was his DJ. Redman was his DJ. Like, that's just nuts to me.
Rod, we turn it over to you. This is the part of the show, if you're new to the Job Fair, where we talk about topics that you could bring up with coworkers you can't stand. We call this segment Breaking the Ice. To help us do that, it's our resident white people, black people-ologist. His mama named him Murado. We call him Rod for short. Rod, before we get to the shit with you.
We needed you.
Had a little snafu last week, apparently.
Is it a snafu?
We had, I didn't see it as a snafu.
Oh, okay.
But we gonna unpack this shit real quick.
Please.
Before we turn it over to Rod. And I waited specifically for Rod's segment because I wanted to get his opinion as well as a comedian and fellow ventriloquist, I'm being told. I did not know you did ventriloquism, Rod.
Yeah. Good.
You can throw your voice.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
The truth don't care whether you believe it or not.
Do it.
Do it.
Throw your voice. I don't believe you.
Not for free.
Oh, I respect that. I respect that.
So we had Jeff Dunham on the program, and Jeff Dunham is, you know, over the course of 30, 40 years of being a ventriloquist, made a lot of different dummies that start in a lot of stereotypical places with some of the jokes, and you know, people have called him racist. Had him on the program last week. I understand we called an email. I know normally you don't want to acknowledge someone who don't like you, but I respect the Job Fair community. And the people who care enough to type a fucking message, then I'll give you the dignity of a response. JG, who's talking shit in the email?
It's Mike, and the email says, "Hey all, I am disappointed to see you bringing on a guest that has repeatedly committed some of the most offensive racist portrayals on stage. I thought you were better than this."
See? And you know why we're bringing this up? First off, Mike, thank you for the email. RoyceJobFair@gmail.com if you want to email us and tell us we ain't shit.
No.
But that last sentence, that's what hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were, like when your parents, when your daddy goes,
"I'm disappointed."
I'm disappointed
in you. I'm not even mad.
I'm like, we don't need to reply to that. It's fine. That's his opinion. But then he said that, I was like, "Ah, shit, we got to talk to Rod about this shit. Figure out what the fuck the ins and outs of it is." Because my thing is this. I understand the accusations that have been put at Jeff Dunham by a lot of different groups over the course of his career. But if you go back and listen to the tapes from last week, I asked him specifically about Sweet Daddy D, the black pimp. Because I feel like as a black person, that's the only thing I can ask him about. I can't bring Jeff Dunham on this show and go, "Motherfucker, what you say about all this shit?" Which he kind of already said when he was talking about the cancel culture shit part of the interview. So I can ask him about the black dummy, which he copped to, said shouldn't have done it, couldn't do it. What I discovered is that I can't think black, so I stopped doing Sweet Daddy D. For me, fuck it, that's enough. Let's keep talking about comedy.
That was more than enough.
But I understand I understand your issues, Mike. You know, we try to do as best we can on this acoustical radio presentation to bring on interesting people. And, you know, when else are you going to talk to a motherfucker that been talking to dolls since the fourth grade? So we try to find interesting and I'm being serious right now. Like, that works.
I'm glad you came and backed that up. Like,
y'all are laughing and you're fucking up me trying to explain myself to Mike.
You made it sound like that nigga was in the 10th grade friendlies having tea parties with his imaginary friends. He been talking to dolls since the 4th grade.
Do they like you? It'll be one thing. And to Rod's credit, I feel like that must be said. To Rod's credit, before we had Jeff Denham on, he was the one that was like, are we sure we want to do this? Da, 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 da. And we were like, yeah, it should be fine. And then to your credit as an interviewer, Roy, you didn't bring it up. He jumped the shark.
Yeah, and then the whole Chris Tucker story and all of that. My thing is this, is that where the black dummy is concerned, Jeff Dunham admitted that he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. He tried to do it. He said he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. He stopped doing it. And then he said what he said about black women, women dummies in general. So in terms of trying to hold his feet to the fire to make him account for all the racial sins of every single dummy that's pissed off every other group, I didn't feel like that was my agency. So I didn't bring it up. Rod, can you be racist as a ventriloquist if you are then disappearing into the persona of another thing?
I have to say yes, absolutely you can.
But if you're just doing, if Jeff Dunham just did a black voice and didn't have a dummy on stage, like, yo, I'm a black pimp, I be smacking bitches, then I would be like, yo, man, this motherfucker can't come on my show. Uh-huh. But then, like, I guess what I'm saying is, if you craft racism in a garage, does that make it not racist? Go.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Like, I mean, I just because it's a joke, that doesn't make it okay. And so just because his characters are supposedly the ones that are offensive, I mean, it's still him. I look at it like this. If his explanation is he won't do the black man dummy anymore because he can't think like a black person and things of that nature, then why does he do any of the other puppets that aren't just white men his own age? Can he think like a dead terrorist, a Middle Easterner, a Muslim, an old man, a kid, a woman, all of this, a Hispanic, jalapeno and all that shit. I think the only reason he doesn't do the black puppet is because he's white. And that's pretty much
optics.
The most blatant form of racism in America is to be racist towards black people. And black people would beat the shit out of you, too.
And to back your point, Rod, black women would beat your ass, too. Like, don't think that you can go out there and make fun of sisters and then just be walking the street and that some sister ain't going to confront you.
That would have been suicide.
Yeah.
I don't think, has there been any, in the history of ventriloquism, has there been a black woman dummy operated by a man?
Not that I can think of.
I actually like pushing the envelope from a comedic standpoint. But where I draw the line is, what do you mean how a black person or a black man or a black woman thinks? That's where I take issue, because that's when it gets stereotypical. That's when it gets into the shucking and jiving. I always want him or anyone to push the envelope.
What I took it as during the conversation, because he talked about a redneck, he could know what the general want was of that person. He knows that a terrorist is angry, so every response should start with anger as the driving emotion to write the dialogue for whatever that joke is. For a black person, black people are not a monolith and niggas is different all over.
Come
he
on.
Recognized it, because what he didn't want to fall into is just a simple basic style of black type of character. If you look at who he's entertaining, which is middle America, then most middle Americans view terrorists or view from a stereotypical sense from when he started. Remember, Jeff Dunham popped 2 years, 2-3 years after 9/11.
Yep.
So we wasn't sparsing Muslims into all these different buckets that we do now. We right. weren't sparsing Middle Easterners into the, like, we weren't doing that. So he could operate from one single North Star behavioral truth to create that dummy. Then with the hillbilly, everybody do the same fucking accent with a hillbilly. You think, you're not sparsing hillbillies the way you do black people, from intellectuals to hood motherfuckers to dreadlocks to people with fucking degrees to people down in the Caribbean with, you know, Caribbean accents, or the black Brits. Like, it's too many different black people that they gonna be like, hey man, why you only think niggas talk like that? All I right. got to fight you.
Yeah.
Okay, so Rod, so what you're saying is that no matter what, the only doll that someone can portray is themselves, and it not have the risk of offending someone.
Yeah, but just because you offend somebody doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. But yeah, like, there's only like so far you can take a character. There's a difference between a character and a person. Mm. And it's like, you can be Jeff Dunham, a white dude, and do just some black cartoon character or some shit. Or like his black puppet. If it wasn't so stereotypical, if it was just an old black man, and the only voice he was doing was just an older black man talking like older black men do, it wouldn't be no problem.
Yes, it would.
But because it was a pimp. That's, but because it was a pimp named Sweet Daddy yeah. D.
Like, that, yeah, like, that's just a person. Just an old person is just a person. But this puppet he does is a specific black pimp old stereotype. And that's where you get into trouble, man.
But he stopped doing it. That was my whole point. Anyway, thank you for the email, Mike. We appreciate you for, if you're still listening, we appreciate you for giving us another chance fucking this week. Thank you, Down South Georgia girl. Search for Black Woman Ventriloquist yields one motherfucker.
Really?
Wow.
Who is it? Willie Tyler and Les Stina?
You're so wrong. You're wrong for that.
I should say motherfucker, because this is actually a wonderful young woman. Megan Pifus, really? Graduate of Vanderbilt. And she is now a puppeteer at Sesame Street. So she didn't even do comedy. They was like, yo, you got to come teach kids.
Well, Sesame Street started out for inner city kids and their issues. So, yeah.
Megan started puppetry and ventriloquism at the age of 10 years old and taught herself puppetry by watching VHS tapes. I bet you she watched Jeff Dunham. Mm. Bet you she fucking came up on it. Damn, she was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno when she was in college. Okay, so this girl did the damn thing.
Absolutely.
She
worked
on Sesame Street.
She's the first black woman in history to be a puppeteer on Sesame Street.
You know what, Frankie? Let's call it. We didn't have a CMO earlier because we talked to Thomas Lennon. Megan Pifus.
Yes.
Operating the goddamn ventriloquism dolls. You are
Cody's most outstanding employee of the week.
Nice.
Now,
can we invite her to our Christmas party? And when she comes, I'm gonna do my Elmo impersonation.
There isn't gonna be a
Christmas party.
Oh. You motherfuckers are getting an Amazon gift card via email. Check your spam.
Okay.
That's what it's gonna be.
Check the spam.
Right. Oh, real quick, Rod, before we get into any of these breaking the ice, what is your doll? Since the rules of ventriloquism are that you must have a doll that is in alignment with whatever the fuck you fucking do.
Bring them up, Rod. Yes, sir. Hey, guy, what's your name?
This is the Wiz.
Okay.
He is a KKK Grand Wizard puppet.
The Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard puppet.
Hang on. Hang on.
Yeah, I'm talking about one time for Albert Pike, baby.
I don't know what you're talking about. For the people listening, I have to paint the picture. Please give me a second.
Get him, Picasso.
On Rod's right hand is a hooded figure wearing a red hood with the red Klan robe, and but he has the googly eyes, like those little eyes you stick on a cigarette. So he looks like a wacky Klansman. Rod, please tell me you're not doing... Nigga, you have a Klan doll as your ventriloquist act?
Yes.
Well, yes, I do. We're an improv team.
Nice.
Jeff Dunham is safer doing a black puppet than you are in the South doing a Klansman ventriloquism act. What the fuck, Rod?
Me and the Wiz are a hit, okay? Well, the first time I ever did the Wiz was at a gay club.
Really?
In Memphis. Shout out to Drew's Place. Headline the show at Drew's Place in Memphis. Shout out to Drew's Place. And we had a great time.
Comedy night at a gay club, and you walked on stage with a puppet in a Klan's robe.
Role model shit.
Mm-hmm. And everybody loved it.
Mike is typing up a new email to us right now.
Yes!
As we speak. The only reason I'm not going to ask you to do part of the act is because I feel like it won't come through properly through people's ears, and that's not fair to whatever the fuck this is going on my screen right now. It deserves to be seen live.
No,
so you
can
at least judge it on all of the merits of performance. So I'm not going to do that to you. I am going to ask you to put that fucking thing away.
Please. Please. I can't even look at it. Yes.
What's wrong? Y'all ain't got y'all freedom papers?
I don't. I don't even know where mine is. Is that material authentic?
It looks like good satin.
Oh, yeah. That's real satin, baby. Oh, yeah. Upscale. Nothing but the best for the Wiz.
Come on now.
You have a Klan wizard dummy and you do ventriloquism with it. What the fuck is wrong with you, man?
I'm back here.
Wait a minute. I have a question for him, Roy. Come on. Let me ask a question. Hey, Rod. Using Jeff Dunham's logic, he stopped talking to black people doing the black puppet because he didn't know black people.
Yeah, how are you able to think like a Klansman?
Oh,
yeah,
because once again, there's a difference between a person and a character. The Wiz, you're assuming he's white, first of all. You're just assuming he's a white man, and that's racist. All right, first off, let's get that straight. Y'all a bunch of racists for assuming he's a white man.
Oh, you're not
going to
include me in that mess.
I'm good.
But that's right. The Wiz he's just a singular thing. The Wiz is just a KKK grand wizard. He's not a person dressed up and me inputting thoughts and trying to figure out how this person would act. The Wiz is just the Wiz.
Mike, I want you to know that I had every intention of like taking your email serious and having a real balanced conversation about who has agency and not agency to be mad on the behalf of other groups and whether or not people who've done offensive things have a right to explain themselves and have their feet held to the fire. I did not know that this conversation was going to end with a goddamn Klansman on Nerado's right hand. And I'm sorry, Mike.
I defy you to find a Klansman who has seen that act and thought it was offensive.
Mike, I'm going to send you a polite email. Oh, no.
Yes!
You know what, Rod? I don't even know if I want a fucking story from you today. I feel like this is enough. I think I'm going to call this one.
Yeah.
Scam of the week time. JG, I believe you had a question for Brother Dupree.
Curious about where did you learn your work ethic? And then I'm also curious about what do you have in your life that's worth more than money to you?
Where did I learn my work ethic? I learned my work ethic from a lot of great mentors. You know, coming up in my life as a young male child trying to maneuver through a city like Newark, New Jersey, which is similar to Compton, which is similar to Cleveland, which is similar, you know, to Southwest D.C. and all of those type of places in Detroit and Chicago at some point. I was looking for things that those mentors that weren't around. So when I couldn't find them, I tried to become what I was looking for. You know, and I found them in spurts in different places. You know, the rap version of me is somebody who never made it. It's my guy Shake from my block. Shake was the flyest the fly. You know, when you was when you were in hip hop, mm-hmm. you know, fashion was key. You know, like how you dressed. That's why the dancers, when they did their backspins, they always had to fly jean jackets with the graffiti on it. And the, you know, the MCs had to have the bell Kangos with the belt. Like, you had to be fly. So Shake was that guy who was fly on our block, and he could rap. So I wanted to Shake as a rapper. He just never made it. You know what I mean? And when it comes to politics, when it comes to like, just maneuvering through community in the block and utilizing, if you're in a community, do something other than, like, I was influenced by drug dealers, by D-Boys, but not to sell drugs. I was influenced by them to be fly. I was influenced by them to move ahead in life and utilize what you have to make something out of nothing. Like, I was influenced by them to do that. And then by doing that, I ran into people who saw something in me as well. Eighth grade teachers who God bless Mr. Nicholas Ibokwe, who was my eighth grade teacher. And I just thought he was being a pain in the butt. But he was really sure that I could have one foot in and one foot out. So after school, he would make sure that not only me, but like a group of five of my guys, and all of us are doing well, with the exception of maybe one, you know, and he made sure all five of us stayed out because he knew we were smart enough, you know, just like they're superheroes, they're supervillains. He knew that.
Absolutely.
If we couldn't become a superhero, we definitely would have been supervillains. You know what I mean? And he noticed that, so he became a mentor. And then you have Hafiz Fareed, who stuck in there the longest, became the manager of Lords of the Underground, became like a father figure. He was the type of dude who was actually the chief of staff for a councilman at that time by the name of Ralph Grant III, Dr. Reverend Ralph Grant. So I got into a little trouble joyriding with some friends from my neighborhood. And Ralph Grant is the one who got me out. At the time, I played baseball and was real good in the state. And I lost all my baseball scholarships for this joyride, you know. And he's the only one that came to my aid, wrote letters to the courts and, you know, came to my school, got all of my grades and showed them that I wasn't really a bad kid. I just made a mistake getting in the wrong car at that time. And he got me a partial baseball scholarship to Shaw University. I went down there. I joined the acting coalition. You know, I played baseball for a little while until I hurt my knee. And I became popular in Shaw University. And that's where I met our other manager, who was Marley Marl's cousin, introduced us to Marley Marl. But that guy, Hafiz Fareed, once we got popular, he showed us what community was. He made sure that all the success we had through Lords of the Underground, that even before Lords of the Underground, you go to these schools and perform. You go to where the people like you. You give them the talent that you're supposed to have, and you cater to them, and you build up your repertoire. And that's what we did, man. So when you ask...
Now, counselor, you have to answer my other question.
What was that?
My other question is, what's in your life that's more important than money?
In my life that's more important than money? Money is not an important factor in my life. It's a necessity, but it's not, you know, I don't do anything for money. I do things for legacy at this age now. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to do it for
legacy.
You know, a lot of times I think that I was doing it for respect too, because I feel like we were so close to New York when it came to hip hop, and I'm speaking of Newark, New Jersey, that we felt like the sixth borough, the lost borough, or the people who didn't get their love. That's why we went so hard. And even to this day, if you talk about the 90s of hip hop, you can't mention the 90s without talking about New Jersey running hip hop. They might mention Redman. They might mention Lauryn Hill. In the 90s, we went so hard because we felt like we didn't get any love for anybody. And that produced the Fugees, you know, from Lauryn to Wyclef. That Queen produced Latifah. Lord of the Underground, there's Queen Latifah, so many, Boys, you know, excuse me, not the Lost Boys, The Outsiders, and the Outlaws. you know, that produced Redman, that produced Apache, that produced Wise Intelligent, that produced
PRT. True.
PRT. Come on, man. You got so many. I can go on and on. Rod Digger.
The greatest female MC of all time, Rod Digger. You need to say that when you say Rod Digger, the greatest female MC of all time.
Right, you got to say that.
I'm sorry.
People, Naughty by Nature, Channel Live, that's them who changed their name to The Artifacts. Mm-hmm. There's so many different groups. And when people talk about the 90s, they don't mention that. They don't mention all of that. They don't mention how New Jersey ran hip hop in the 90s. And I'm talking about platinum artists. So, and then you talk about one half of DOS FX. And, you know, it's just so many more and more. But that's what kind of powered us. And to answer your question, the thing that is worth more than money is actually chasing your passion, living your passion out in real time. That's worth way more than money, because if you live your passion out, the money and the monetary things, that'll come to you. You know, when you do something you love and you love to do it, you'll create love for yourself. You'll create a pathway for yourself financially. You know, so but if you just do it for money, I'm not saying that you won't have some type of riches that come to you, but it won't last, and it'll be done for the wrong reasons, and it'll cause too many problems. I know so many rich people who are unhappy.
Miserable.
So,
yes.
You know.
Miserable.
After the break, we're going to bring it home with Brother Dupree Kelly and talk a little bit more about this world of politics and what it means to give a damn about the community that you came up in.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Jive Fab, we are bringing it home with the Honorable Dupree Kelly. You know, this has been enlightening, just not just on the political tip there, but also in learning all of this rap history of just how every rapper, they just all knew each other and hung out and helped.
He dropped jewels on me. For the life of me, I never knew that Here Come the Lords was a diss song on DOS FX. Like, I would have never even put that two and two together, man.
Does that mean we have to have DOS FX on the podcast now so they can have their rebuttal? Yeah, like some political... You got to talk to both sides type shit.
It'd be the first Job Fair rap battle. That'd be amazing.
But Brother Kelly, let me fire off a couple of questions because I know we got a wrap here and I don't want to keep you all day. You transition into politics and you make the decision to run for one office, which you did not get.
Right.
And then you make the decision to cock and reload and run again. And you win. And you're now a West Ward councilman and you govern where you grew up, which I think is another key part about your arc and your journey and like truly having love for where you are and figuring out ways to make it better. And so, you know, you have a nonprofit organization called 211 Community Impact. And so you all try to foster change in the community. You educational programs, you're trying to address homelessness, you've given away meals, like you're giving away free haircuts and hairstyling to boys and girls and teaching them about hygiene and just how to dress for a different occasion, shrimp fork, salad fork, dinner fork, just
that sound like a new song right there,
right?
So you've made all of these donations to innumerable community partners and schools. What are some of the skills from rapping in the music industry that directly transfer over into politics?
Galvanizing people, that translated, you know, the more popular you are, the more people come and listen to you, right? So marketing differently, you know, outside the box is what the entertainment showed me, but still correlates with the campaign of a political campaign. I think being able to, like I said, galvanize the people, but also being able to get the people team building comes from, you know, when you're young,
Teams and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Street teams, all of that.
When you're
a 19-year-old boy and they put $1 million in your pocket and it doesn't come with instructions, you know, they put a team around you. Okay. Yeah. Martha from marketing. Yeah. Vincent from publicity. This, you know, they put all of these people, the record guy in Chicago, they build a team. So a lot of times they think they put smarter people around you than you being the smartest person at the table. So it showed me never be the smartest person at the table, you know, and it taught me how to delegate. It taught me how to team build. It taught me how to galvanize the people. It taught me how to connect with the people with issues, because sometimes you'll make a record and they'll be like, man, I love how you made that Indian record, Chief Rocka, what y'all made about the Indians. Now they love it so much. You can't tell them it's not about it's an not Indian.
About an Indian word.
That's funny. You know,
just so know that they love it and you nod your head and go,
and allow them to, whatever, however they vision it and just kind of, see what their vision is and take that and build on top of that, you know? So it taught me a lot of those things. It also taught me how not to let women, interrupt you, you know, because when usually, not how to let women interrupt you.
Explain, please.
I'm talking about in a good way. I'm talking about in a bad way.
Oh, you know, I'm with you now.
You got fame and you come from nothing.
Okay.
You out there, you know, fraternizing.
So vice versa. Don't let men interrupt you either. I'm with you.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Agree with that, Ms. Jacqueline.
I'm sorry for Jacqueline interrupting you.
Whatever. I had to get some clarification going on here.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I just think the distractions, you know, with women. The distractions with money. I've done all of that on the entertainment side. So it taught me not to bring that same energy into the politics side on the politics platform. I just did an interview with my sister, you know, Roxanne Shante.
Nice. Shout out.
Have a nice day, Roxanne Shante. Yeah.
Word. They asked her a question. What was her most memorable? Like, she's known me since I was 17 years old.
Wow.
And I didn't have a record deal or anything. And they asked her what was the most memorable time of me. And she told them that she remembered that one time I came to her album release party and Big Daddy Kane was there. Biz Markie was there. Kool G Rap, Marley Marl, Red Alert, all of the powers that be. This is 1988. So everybody that was basically popping in 88 was in this room. I came there with her sister and friends and everybody was telling Shante that I was the next rap dude from Newark. And they had a cipher with all of them. I wish somebody has to have this video or something. Probably it's a VHS back then. But somebody told them that they tried to hand me the mic. And I was like, nah, that's them right now. They got records out and let them do their thing. So she remembered that I never grabbed the mic. And after our interview, she said, you know, why didn't you ever grab the mic? And I thought I was out of my place, you know, or maybe I thought that, you know, nowadays, of course I would grab the mic, but I thought I was just like, you know, let them do their thing. My time will come. And I didn't grab the mic. So long story short, when I was leaving the interview, she said, on this level that you on now, on this platform that you on now, never not grab the mic. You belong in the room, you know. And it just hit me in a different way. So I learned all of those things from the things that I didn't do well or didn't do right at those moments or those times in the hip hop entertainment industry. I try to fix that on the level that I am now with policy and legislation. And you know, I don't even consider myself a politician, but my team tell me to stop. I have to stop saying that because it is what it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, I still consider myself a public servant, but you know, we're going to change what that ideology of a politician is. And that's by doing the work and you know, just showing it through our actions. That's the only way that we can do all it. Right. 'Cause people are going to say what they're going to say.
CMO, Roy. Well, CMO.
Well, brother, counselor, Kelly, you done so much. I'm just looking over this, man. You done delivered. Newark is just as bad as Flint when it comes to the water crisis. You slinging free water to everybody who needs it. You lift bus for special needs students damn neighborhood. You are doing the look good, feel good program. And we want to make donations to the 211 Community Impact. Where can people find that real quick?
They can go to the website. Just go to 211, and those are the numbers, 211, 211 Community, and that's CI as in Community Impact, 211communityimpact.com. You can just hit the donation button. You know, or you can go to our Instagram page, which is The Real 211CI as in Community Impact. Yeah, man. And or you can hit me up on my personal IG, Twitter, Facebook, all the same name. And that's Do It All Do, DOITALLDU at the end. And if you want to support us and follow what we're doing on the political platform, everything is Do It All. One word, four, and that's F-O-R, Newark. Do It All for Newark.
Do It All for Newark.
Oh, and DuPrayKelly.com, the website. Go ahead to the website, subscribe. You can find out everything that's going on in our community at DuPrayKelly.com.
Beautiful. We'll have that in the Job Fair episode description. Last question, single word answer. Shadier industry to be involved in?
Ooh.
Record industry or politics?
Record industry shady because they get young people to sign contracts and they don't know what they're signing.
Fair.
Politic world, you think it's about the people and it's supposed to be about the people, but the people are second or third. And other issues of power plays a part before that makes people move funny. Anytime people move funny, they're not in the light no more. They're in the shade.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Your art to me is one of the most fascinating in the world of hip hop. You and Bun B selling these good-ass hamburgers down in Texas.
Yeah, about them Bun B burgers, bro.
Well, respect to you, man. Thank you so much, brother. And thank you for coming on the Job Fair.
Appreciate you,
brother. Yo, salute, man. Job Fair, man. Everybody get employed out there. Get a job, man. Make sure it's fair. Man. And equitable.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.